taking their place in a long, true line of everyday Americans.
Helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, this is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
One of the things I'd say in response to the media is when they talk about, especially early on, about the way I did my job, I said, I will absolutely leave the court when I do my job as poorly as you do yours. And that was meant as a compliment, really.
By now, you've probably heard that quote from Associate Justice Thomas before. But it's an interesting quote. He's comparing how he does his job with how the media does theirs. But shouldn't we, the people, take some time and examine how all those in government are doing their jobs? They do work for us, after all. So today, I want to take a look at some examples where our government is doing its job, or has done in the past, pretty much as badly as the media is currently doing their job today. Well, hello there, everyday Americans. My name is Paul Engel. Welcome to the Constitution Study. Today, we're going to look a little bit of history, a little bit of current events, and see how our government is doing in the job we gave it under the rules we set up for it under the Constitution. I want to start with the Supreme Court of the United States. There are certain Supreme Court cases that are infamous, either for their import or their error. Miranda, Roe v. Wade, and Obergefell are just a few. Two of these cases are known simply as Dred Scott and Korematsu. These cases are not only examples of when the courts get things wrong, but of our nature to treat others as less than human. In the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson gave us this iconic phrase: "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." Sadly, we have yet to live up to Jefferson's vision. We have a history in America of treating certain people as less than human. Now, we hear a lot about the enslavement of blacks and some about the treatment of Indians, but little about how the Chinese, the Irish, the Italians, the Jews, and others have been treated. You would hope that, at least before the court, justice would remain blind. Two cases we're looking at today show that injustice before the bench is nothing new. Now, most Americans have at least a passing familiarity with the Dred Scott case. Most of us were taught in schools that this is the case where the court found that blacks were not citizens and had no rights. A free Negro of the African race, whose ancestors were brought to this country and sold as slaves, is not a citizen within the meaning of the Constitution of the United States. Now, are the rights protected by the Constitution limited to citizens of the United States? Well, Article 4, Section 2, Clause 1 of the Constitution says, "The citizens of each state shall be entitled to all the privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states." While there are privileges and immunities, such as voting, that are limited to citizens, other rights protected by the Constitution aren't. For example, the Fifth Amendment states, "No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law." The issue at hand did not rest solely on Mr. Scott's race, but on his immigration status. Reading from the opinion: "A state, by its laws passed since the adoption of the Constitution, may put a foreigner or any other description of person upon a footing with its own citizens as to all the rights and privileges enjoyed by them within its dominion and by its laws. But that will not make him a citizen of the United States, nor entitle him to sue in its courts, nor to any other privilege and immunities of a citizen in another state." Remember, this was 1856, before the 13th and 14th Amendments were ratified. When Mr. Scott's ancestors were imported as slaves, they were not granted citizenship. As such, Mr. Scott was not considered a citizen either. He was, however, a person, and should have had his liberty protected under the Fifth Amendment. That was not the case. Now, this precedent was overturned by the ratification of the 14th Amendment. "All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside." Now, most people I talk to don't recognize the case Korematsu versus the United States, even though they are aware of the Japanese internment during World War II. It all started when President Roosevelt signed Executive Order 9066. "Now, therefore, by virtue of the authority vested in me as President of the United States,
and Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy. I hereby authorize and direct the Secretary of War and the military commanders who he may from time to time designate, whenever he or any designated commander deems such action necessary or desirable, to prescribe military areas in such places and of such extent as he or the appropriate military commander may determine, from which any or all persons may be excluded, and with respect to which the right of any person to enter, remain in, or leave shall be subject to whatever restrictions the Secretary of War or the appropriate military commander may impose in his discretion. Let's start with the obvious. There is no authority vested in the President of the United States to designate military areas within the United States. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 7 delegates to Congress legislative power over federal property, including places purchased by the consent of the state legislature. Quoting, to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district, not exceeding 10 miles square, as may, by secession of particular states and the acceptance of Congress, become the seat of government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be, for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. Not only did this executive order claim powers not delegated to the United States, much less the president, it violated both the Fifth and Tenth Amendments of the Constitution. See, the Fifth Amendment states, no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And the Tenth Amendment says, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. This means that Executive Order 9066 is not only invalid, but void. Well, at least according to Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Papers 78. There is no position which depends on clearer principle than that every act of a delegated authority, contrary to the tenor of the commission under which it is exercised, is void. Yet, just like today, that did not stop those in government from treating this illegal order as valid law. In response to President Roosevelt's order, the Western Defense Command and Fourth Army issued the Civilian Exclusion Order No. 34. Pursuant to the provisions of Public Proclamations No. 1 and 2, this headquarters, dated March 2, 1942, and March 16, 1942, respectively, it is hereby ordered that from and after 12 o'clock noon PWT of Saturday, May 9, 1942, all persons of Japanese ancestry, both alien and non-alien, be excluded from that portion of Military Area No. 1, described as follows. Under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, members of the military are required to follow all lawful orders. Since the president does not have the authority to designate areas as under military control, he cannot legally order someone to do so. Furthermore, Lieutenant General J.I. DeWitt, commander of the Fourth Army, violated both his oath and the law by depriving people of their liberty and property by excluding people of Japanese ancestry from any area. Civil Exclusion Order No. 34 also required a member of each family report to a civil control station, again, in violation of the Constitution and laws of the United States. A responsible member of each family and each individual living alone in the above-described area will report between the hours of 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday, May 4, 1942, or during the same hours on Tuesday, to the civil control station located at 920 C Street, Hayward, California. Now, those who reported and their families would be relocated to internment camps for the duration of the war. Fred Korematsu ignored the order to relocate, was arrested, and convicted of violating the order. He sued, arguing that the executive order infringed on his liberty without due process of law and therefore violated his rights protected under the Fifth Amendment. Sadly, the Supreme Court did not see it that way. We uphold the exclusion order as of the time it was made and when the petitioner violated it. In doing so, we are not unmindful of the hardships imposed by it upon a large group of American citizens. But hardships are part of war, and war is an aggregation of hardships. All citizens alike, both in and out of uniform, feel the impact of war in greater or lesser measure. Citizenship has its responsibilities as well as its privileges, and in time of war, the burden is always heavier. Compulsory exclusion of large groups of citizens from their homes, except under circumstances of direst emergency and peril, is inconsistent with our basic governmental institutions. But when, under conditions of modern warfare, our shores are threatened by hostile forces, the power to protect must be commensurate with the threatened danger. See, according to the Supreme Court, you have no rights except the ones government allows you to keep. The court talks about the hardships of war, but seems to ignore the Constitution of the United States or the concept of unalienable rights. This case is an example of the abuse of so-called judicial review. The idea that the courts can supersede your rights and the Constitution when there's a sufficiently compelling government interest. If the government doesn't need to follow the supreme law of the land, then what good is it? What were these brave men fighting for, if not to protect the rights this government had denied to people based solely on their heritage? How can you expect your rights to be protected by such a so-called justice system? Now, what do these two famous, or rather infamous, cases have in common? They denied rights to human beings because of their ancestry. While the precedent in Scott was overturned by the 14th Amendment, nothing has overturned the opinion in Korematsu. Laws that violated the supreme law of the land were used in both cases, and courts endorsed these travesties of justice. Santayana said, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. There is nothing we can do to change the past. However, by remembering the past, we can learn from it and do whatever we can to prevent similar abuses from happening in the future." And here we are, watching while government officials pass repugnant laws and issuing illegal executive orders to infringe on the rights of the American people. People are denied their liberty and property for not complying with an illegal government order. People are being denied their right to speak and to the press if they contradict the approved government narrative. Roosevelt's executive order led to exclusion and internment, and Biden's orders have led to banishment from employment, public transportation, and health care. Let us not forget about the internment of those who challenged the validity of the 2020 elections. I wonder if future generations will look back at the laws and cases we're dealing with today with the same disdain with which we hold these two cases.
So there are certainly historical examples of when justices of the Supreme Court did their job as poorly as the media tends to do theirs today. And I'm sure there are people that would complain that the court today is doing their job just as bad as they did before. Well, maybe not just as bad. You see, there's been talk now for years about packing the court. And of course, with the recent leak of a draft opinion involving the Dobbs versus Mississippi case, the one that stated that, oh, by the way, the court got it wrong back in 73. There's no constitutional authority for the opinion of Roe v. Wade or Doe v. Casey. Roe v. Wade or Casey versus Planned Parenthood. Well, that's not good enough. See, people said, well, we're not getting the outcomes we like. And to me, that's a very important point. See, if we're going to judge the actions of members of a court, it shouldn't be based on whether or not we like the outcomes. It's whether or not the opinions they draft are based in law, specifically, especially the supreme law, the Constitution of the United States. See, here's the interesting thing. You see, while the Dred Scott Court was correct under law at that time, Mr. Scott was not a citizen of the United States. Now, their claim that that denied him the ability to bring a case before federal court is not based on law anywhere. Right? It is a deprivation of a right to petition the government for a redress of grievance. It's protected by the First Amendment. So there's no law under which you can be denied access to a federal court for a crime involving the U.S. Constitution or a case involving the U.S. Constitution just because you're not a citizen. Similarly, both Scott and Korematsu blatantly ignored the Fifth Amendment, which said that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. In both cases, both Scott and Korematsu were denied liberty, the ability to live their lives as they see fit, and the property they have in their own bodies, without due process of law. In other words, they were not found guilty of a crime. Their rights were denied. And while, again, Scott was effectively overturned by the 14th Amendment, making him a citizen, nobody's ever turned Korematsu. And we've seen the historical vestiges of that. We see it in the mandates coming out of Washington, the executive orders setting regulations for employment and requiring jabs and masks and all, you know, on all of these. These are all, in many ways, vestiges of both Scott and Korematsu. and this idea that your rights only exist if the government doesn't have a really, really good reason to infringe on them. So the next time you hear a case talking about judicial review or different levels of scrutiny, understand what they're talking about. They're talking about the ability for the government to determine whether or not you actually have rights or whether or not they can infringe on your rights. Because while there was a threat during World War II, just because we're at war doesn't mean the law ceases to exist. If all it takes is an emergency for your rights to cease to exist, we don't live in a free country. Now, I have to take a break, but before I do, I want you to talk to you about Healthy Cell. Now, tomorrow, I'm hitting the road. I'm going to be on the road for a few days. In fact, you may notice the audio sounds a little differently because I'll be recording from a hotel room. But yeah, there are certain things that I always keep in my bag when I travel. And one of them is Healthy Cell's Immune Super Boost. See, when you travel, you're more likely to pick up a bug or get sick. Your immune system is going to work extra hard. It needs that support. So I, again, use Immune Super Boost. It is designed with over a dozen supplements to boost your immune system, give it the support it needs in a simple travel-ready gel pack. So give it a try. Go to HealthyCell.com, try Immune Super Boost, try any of their products, but use the code OUTLOUD at checkout, and they will give you 20% off your first order. So again, the website's HealthyCell.com. Try any of their products, put your cart together, but when you check out, use the code OUTLOUD. It lets them know you listen to America Out Loud, and they will give you 20% off your first order as a thank you.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health four times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. It tastes great, comes in a convenient squeeze gel pack, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Well, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. We're taking a look at what we're reviewing. How well our employees and government are doing their job. And as we left, we started talking about this concept of, are there situations, are there emergencies that supersede the Constitution of the United States? Now, we talked about Korematsu and the emergency of World War II, but how many of you were familiar with the Presidential Emergency Action Documents? This is a Cold War era document drafted under Eisenhower that basically is designed to give presidential powers under emergencies. It was then reviewed and updated under George W. Bush in 2004 after the 9/11 attacks. Now, the Brennan Center for Justice has issued a FOIA request. They've requested some of these documents so they can review them. Now, it's interesting that most of these documents are classified. So in response to the FOIA request, the Brennan Center for Justice received 500 pages for review, but another 6,000 remained classified. But based on the documents that the Brennan Center received, the president can activate powers that, well, they have no oversight. They're completely unconstitutional. The power to shut down or seize control of any facility or station for wire communication, detaining individuals, and restricting travel during national security emergencies. So when they're talking about wire communications, of course, they're talking about telephone calls and telegrams, which at the time that this document was drafted, well, they were primary communications. However, as terminology has changed over time, this has been reinterpreted to include all electronic communications, including the internet, which makes one lead to believe, including the Brennan Center, that this could mean the president can simply turn off the internet. Sound very much like the communist Chinese, right? If we don't like what's going on, we can just kill the internet, shut it down, turn it off. Now tell me, where in the Constitution is the United States given that power? Absolutely nowhere. But you see, again, we make up rules where we ignore the law. Why? Well, because we're scared. See, during World War II, we were afraid of Japanese invasion. We allowed rights to be destroyed. During the Cold War, we were worried about a Russian nuclear launch. World War III, we said, oh, under emergency circumstances, laws don't matter. Now, I know that's not the way they put it, but that's effectively what they're saying. And then once again, after 9/11, we've decided to give the president tremendous authority that is not a part of the Constitution, not a power delegated to the United States. But we would have to live under it because there are very few people that would even understand the unconstitutionality of these actions, much less the fortitude to stand up and oppose them. Now, many of you remember that in 2008, the Supreme Court recognized that detainees in Guantanamo Bay had a constitutionally protected right to challenge their detention in court. It's referred to commonly as habeas corpus. This is a case of Bodine versus Bush. However, interestingly enough, based on the Brennan Center's research, they don't believe any of these presidential emergency action documents were actually withdrawn. In fact, 8 new ones were added to the bundle, suggesting that during a time of an emergency, a president can simply order the detention of individuals. Forget the Constitution. Forget the basic concept of rights. Forget this whole idea of shall not be infringed, shall not be enough. It goes away. Because a presidential document said the president can do this. There are also, according to these documents, the president can authorize other restrictions, the use of U.S. passports, or curtail travel. And this has been done to countries like Lebanon, Iraq, Libya, North Korea. But the idea is all the president has to do is declare an emergency, and suddenly he becomes king. The Constitution doesn't matter, your rights don't matter, everything disappears because the president said, we are in an emergency. How safe do you feel about your rights now? How safe do you feel about your rights knowing that even though a Supreme Court said, no, you cannot detain without charge, you can't deny habeas corpus to people just because you put them in another country, in a base off the continental U.S., all they did was say, no, we have more powers. See, this is the interesting thing. This is what is not supposed to be allowed in the United States. The United States cannot delegate to itself powers. They only come from the Constitution. Yet here we have the federal government delegating to itself powers. specifically the president. Now, let me ask you, how many states have stood up and said, excuse me, Mr. President, not only did we not delegate to you those powers, you don't have the power to grant yourself powers. Your documents mean absolutely bubkiss. To my knowledge, none. And I wonder how many states are aware of this and how many states would do something should a president say, no, we're going to start denying travel. We're going to start detaining your citizens. We're going to waive the basic concept of rights. We're going to turn the Constitution into a servant of government rather than its master. Somehow, I don't think that there are many states that would stand up in those situations because they've all been cowed. But we see, even today, abuse of these types of orders. Well, for example, you've all heard about the infant formula shortage. By the way, a shortage created in large part by federal regulations. So what is the federal government's response to the problems created in large part, not entirely, but in large part to their own regulations? Well, President Biden invoked the Defense Production Act. Now, have you heard of the Defense Production Act? The Defense Production Act, which is, I believe, Title 50, Section 4501 of the United States Code, it says that Congress finds that the security of the United States is dependent on the ability of domestic industrial base to supply materials and services for the national defense and to prepare for and respond to military conflicts, natural or man-caused disasters, or acts of terrorism within the United States. See, Congress said, we have a need. In order to maintain the security of the United States, we must have supplies, materials, services for the national defense. Well, yeah, okay, we may need them for, there may be natural man-caused disasters, but basically, this is Congress saying, listen, in order to obtain our own security, and that word's important, we are going to allow the federal government to throw out the Constitution and dictate to private entities what they can do. Now, most of the act, I haven't gone into great detail, but most of the act deals with, well, you know, we should recommend the things like, you know, dispersing production to different geographic locations, providing financial assistance under the act to deal with some of the industrial shortfalls, things like that. But then we get to Section 101, and we read, the president is authorized to require that performance under contracts or orders other than contracts of employment, which he deems necessary or appropriate to promote the national defense, shall take priority over performance under any other contract or order, and for the purpose of assuring such priority, to require acceptance and performance of such contracts or orders in preference of other contract or orders by any person he finds to be capable of their performance, and allocate materials, services, and facilities in such manner, upon such conditions, and to such an extent as he shall deem necessary or appropriate to promote the national defense. Is baby formula part of the national defense? But just look what it's saying. Congress gives the president the authority to take over private business, to decide for private businesses which contracts and in what order they will fulfill them. Now, it's one thing for the president to say, hey, we are at war. Of all the government contracts you have, we want you to prioritize these for national defense. But it doesn't seem to say government contracts in here. Again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's more material in here that I haven't gotten to. It is a fairly long statute. There's a lot here. But we've basically handed a king the power to say, listen, this is an emergency. I've declared it an emergency. I've declared that it's necessary for the national defense. Baby formula manufacturers, if you make products, ingredients for baby formula, you must prioritize that over everything else because the president said so. Again, I'm not talking about someone doing their patriotic duty. I'm not talking about the president recommending, encouraging. I'm not talking about the president. You know, if the federal government has contracts with a company that includes baby formula, that they say, hey, of all of our contracts, prioritize the baby formula. Those are federal contracts. That's not what the Defense Production Act says, and it's not how it's being used. See, under in a statement released by the White House, I read, invoking the Defense Production Act to ensure that manufacturers have the necessary ingredients to make safe, healthy infant formula here at home, President Biden is invoking the Defense Production Act. The president is requiring suppliers to direct needed resources to infant formula manufacturers before any other customer who may have ordered that good. Directing firms to prioritize and allocate the production of key infant formula inputs will help increase production and speed up in supply chain. In other words, the president just ordered manufacturers to make more baby formula. No Congress, no Constitution. Tell me, there's no legal authority. The Defense Production Act is void. It is repugnant to the Constitution because it claims to deprive these manufacturers of their liberty and their property without due process of law. See, this is what happens when we let these things slip time and time and time again. So we have the courts that can't read the Constitution or just refuse to apply the Constitution. We've seen Congress write laws that are repugnant to the Constitution, but we still let them go slip through. And here we have a president of the United States. And by the way, he's not the first. I doubt he'll be the last. But we have the executive branch that says, I am a king. I am going to direct. I'm going to order these manufacturers to do what I want them to do. Now, let me ask you one other side question while I'm thinking of it. Let's say this goes through, and all of these manufacturers focus all their resources on baby formula. And out of that, there are other things that are not produced, other foodstuffs that are not produced. And we end up with a shortage of something else in direct response to this illegal action by the president. Who do you think is going to get blamed? The president or the company that simply followed the oligarch as he ordered them to change their business plan without any consideration of the rest of what's going on? See what you have? You have the government creating illegal regulations. Those illegal regulations lead to a problem. The government fixes that problem by issuing more illegal regulations. And we go on and on and on in a vicious cycle of tyranny. I can understand why some people say the Constitution doesn't matter anymore. Because there it is, right there in black and white, prohibiting exactly these types of actions. And it seems nobody will pick it up and use it. See, the Constitution's a tool. It's not a being, it's a tool. You can't lay out a bunch of nails and hammers and expect a house to be built any more than you could expect the Constitution to simply pick itself up and start dope slapping all these idiots that violate it. It is a law. But a law has no meaning if it is not enforced. Well, who's responsible for enforcing the law? Well, at one level, the president is. But the president's one of the ones that's breaking the law. Well, who else? Well, as parties to the contract, the states have the power to enforce the law. But the states won't do it. In part because, well, they're taking bribes from the United States, and the last thing they want to do is give up on their gravy train. Which leads you to the last line of defense. The American people can use the Constitution. But they won't do it because they like their gravy train as well. They have been bought and paid for. As Alexis de Tocqueville warned us, this country will last until Congress figures out it can bribe the American people with their own money. Well, Congress has figured it out. And now we, the bribed, are living as serfs under tyrants. because we accepted the bribe and then refused to stand up when they started taking our rights. In other words, we sat back while our employees robbed us blind. And ultimately, there's no one to blame but ourselves. Sure, you can point the finger at Washington or your state house or a political party or a political movement, but ultimately, it is we, the people, that ordained and established the Constitution. We did it through our states, which we empowered to do so. And we sat back and let them destroy the Union. And now when they take these illegal powers that we let them assume, when they use them to infringe on our rights, we whine and cry and complain and run back to federal government. Mommy government, please stop being mean to me. It's about time we, the people, grow up. Start looking at these people as our employees and demand they follow the rules or else lose their job, just like you would with any other employee. Now, I have to take another break, but before I do, I want to remind you to please let other people know they too can listen to the Constitution Study, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. They can listen on our media player or on our apps for Apple, Android, or Alexa. Just go to AmericaOutloud.com. You'll find the links for all the ways you can listen. Now, also, this program, along with others, go to the America Out Loud podcast generally a day or two after they're heard on the radio. You can listen on Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, basically iHeart Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your podcasts. But do me a favor, if you do, leave a rating, subscribe, especially go to an Apple Podcast, leave us a rating and a review. It helps other people find not just the Constitution Study, but all the programs here on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
While many things we hear are lies, we know one thing is true. Viruses exist and people get sick. Look, there's no guaranteed way to keep from getting sick, but there is a way to reduce your chances. Cofix RX, the original povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray that you hear Dr. McCullough talking about, provides an additional, invisible layer of protection from colds, flu, coronaviruses, and more. Click the banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
People often ask me, Malcolm, how do we fight the corruption? Robert Frost has said it best, freedom lies in being bold. Well, for six incredible years, bold is America Out Loud. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day, yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've joined the Constitution Study. We're talking about reviewing our employees, seeing how our employees and government are doing. And so far, I can't exactly say I'm giving them a passing grade. Now, we've talked about the courts, we've talked about the executive, we talked about Congress, but what about international? See, one of the problems we have is that because we have allowed our employees in government to treat the Constitution like dirt, to not uphold it as a supreme law of the land, we've watched while they have, let's say, bowed the knee to certain international organizations, at least some leaders have. Now, by now, you've probably heard of the changes that the U.S. delegation wants to make to the international health regulations at the World Health Organization. Now, to my knowledge, the United States has not signed any treaty that would establish or give any legal force to anything the WHO says. So why is that important? Well, you have the Supremacy Clause, of the U.S. Constitution. This is Article 6, Clause 2, which says, "This Constitution and the laws of the United States which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land." So in order for a treaty to have any force of law in the United States, first, it must be ratified by the Senate. That's a requirement under, let's say it's Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2, saying the president of the power, by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, to make treaties, provided two-thirds of the senators present concur. So in order for anything the WHO does to have any legal authority within the United States, first, it has to be a treaty ratified by the Senate, with the advice and consent of the Senate, and approved by two-thirds of the senators present. Second, it must only involve authority given to the United States, under the authority of the United States. Now, if you look, where does the United States get its authority? Under the Constitution of the United States. It says right there in the 10th Amendment, powers not delegated to the United States by this Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, remain with the states respectively, or with the people. So the only authority the United States has comes from the Constitution. Since medical regulation, public health, all that stuff are not powers delegated to the United States, even if the president were to sign and were to negotiate and the Senate were to approve a treaty, that is not a treaty under the authority of the United States. Therefore, it does not have the force of law within the United States. It is not the supreme law of the land. So legally, this WHO treaty, accord, whatever you're going to call it, has no legal authority within the United States itself. But since the American politicians, since the American courts, since the American people have been lied to for so long, a lot of people think that if these regulations, these amended regulations go into effect, the WHO would have legal control over citizens of the United States. That they would literally take away your right to live your life as you see fit. To literally take away the sovereignty that you have and that your states have. Now, I'm not saying that these amendments are good or bad. I'm not saying whether or not they would have impact on other countries. I'm only dealing with their effect in the United States. Right? The president doesn't have the authority to regulate public health. He doesn't have the authority to treat, to enact a power not authorized, not given to the United States by the Constitution. But again, since so many Americans are so woefully ignorant of the Constitution, I'm watching people argue back and forth about, well, will it take away sovereignty? Does it matter? All you have to do is read the Constitution and understand what the president's doing is illegal. And since I believe it's the executive branch that's developing these amendments, they're trying to deprive the American people of rights protected by the Constitution, which is a federal crime. And since he's trying to do it through the treaty clause, or not even bother with the treaty clause, he's not even going through a treaty, this is a usurpation of power. All of which, in my mind, rise to the state of a high crime, if not a misdemeanor. So he's committed federal crimes by attempting to willfully deprive the American people of rights protected by the Constitution. Title 18, United States Code, Section 242. Voila. Crime. Misdemeanor. Bad behavior, violation of his oath of office. But you see, we'll never be impeached. Why? Well, certainly won't be impeached for this, for two reasons. One, right now, his party controls both houses of Congress. They ain't going to do it because they like the power. But what happens in 2022? What happens if the Republicans take over both the House and the Senate? I doubt they would do it either because they simply want their man to be able to do it when he gets in office. That's why I say there's no one in Washington protecting your rights. Oh, there are certain individuals. There are individuals that are protecting your rights. But for the most part, governments are not protecting your rights, which is their sole purpose. The Declaration of Independence says we create governments to protect our rights. And they failed. Yet we keep hiring the same people over and over and over again. Expecting that somehow, if we just get the right person or the right party or the right combination, all will be well. But it won't. Because you don't have the basic foundational understanding that is the Constitution, that is the supreme law of the land. Not what the president says, not what Congress says, not what the WHO says, the Constitution. And anything repugnant to the Constitution is void. Federalist 78, Alexander Hamilton. Any act of a delegated authority contrary to the tenor of the commission under which it is created is void. No act of Congress contrary to the Constitution can be valid. The Supreme Court in Marbury versus Madison. No act of a legislative authority contrary to the Constitution, repugnant to the Constitution, can be valid. We need to learn these lessons. Now, when I say there's nobody in Congress, there are a few people that are standing up. They're not so much standing up for your rights. It seems to be standing up for their own. Well, for example, we have this kangaroo court witch hunt known as the Special Committee on January 6th. And it's been using its power like a blunderbuss, going after all the political enemies of the Democrats. One of them being House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. Now, they've issued a subpoena for him to come testify. He says no. He says, I won't do it. Now, according to reports, Representative McCarthy sent a letter to the committee stating that the Select Committee lacks authority to issue subpoenas to lawmakers under House rules. Now, I find it interesting because if I read the Constitution, Congress has no authority to issue subpoenas, period. They have no right to order you to appear before them. That's not a power delegated to the United States. It's certainly not due process. So Mr. McCarthy is saying, well, you can't do this because I'm a member of the House. Again, a special position. But what about you and me? Where does Congress have the legal authority to issue a subpoena? I don't find it in the Constitution. Well, what about private organizations? See, that same panel issued subpoenas to the Republican National Committee and its vendors, specifically Salesforce, demanding they produce information before a round of upcoming hearings. Now, the Select Committee sent a letter saying they recognize that the Salesforce documentation will not be available on the timeline required for use in these hearings. So the Select Committee no longer seeks Salesforce documentation on a highly expedited schedule. No, it didn't say, wait a second, you have no right to that information. You have no legal authority to request that information. This is an unreasonable search. It is a violation of powers. It's an abuse of authority, of position. Nope, they simply said, we can't get it in time, so yeah, we'll wait. We'll decide later what we want to do. See what I mean? They're willing to protect themselves, right? Oh, okay, well, it's the RNC, not the people, not the public, the special ones, the ones that are part of the right environment, the political class. This is the logical, the rational, the should be a fully anticipated outcome of letting people we hire act like we work for them, letting them run amok and never holding them accountable. And again, I fully blame the American people for their actions. I understand they're ignorant. We have not taught this for decades. We have not taught the Constitution. We have not taught what the Constitution says. They don't understand the supreme law of the land. But I don't divest them of responsibility. Because the very idea that they expected someone else to be responsible for their education, that parents expected government to be responsible for the education of their children. Well, to me, that's the problem. That's the abdication of responsibility. Remember, John Jay said, every member of the state, not every lawyer, not every politician, everyone. Lord knows, I wish the lawyers and the politicians and the judges would read it. But everyone, every member of the state ought diligently to read and study the Constitution of its country and teach the rising generation to be free. We failed. As a nation, we are abject failures, both at reading and studying the Constitution and at teaching the rising generation to be free. Therefore, we have no basis, no understanding, no standard by which to vet our employees. It comes down to what we like. It comes down to who gives us the most goodies. We have let this happen. And yes, we are at the tail of a line of people that have let this happen. But we have a choice. See, we're not responsible for what our parents and our grandparents let happen, but we are responsible for what we let happen. We, the people, we are responsible for our own education, including how to vet our candidates. Now, if you want to find out more, this year I'm doing what I'm calling my Blessings of Liberty Tour. I'm traveling the country. I'm negotiating with people on dates as we speak. And I'm going to be going around explaining the blessings of liberty, the wonderful system of government that our founding fathers have given us and how it has been inverted and perverted over the decades. If knowledge is power, well, knowledge in action is power. But you have to start with the knowledge. Now, if you want to find out more, just go to constitutionstudy.com/tour. I'm still putting up I'm still updating the page with more information. As venues confirm, as locations confirm, they will appear on that page. If you would like me to come speak at your event, speak at your location, there's a form right there to fill out, and I will get in touch with you, and we'll see if we can make that happen. Again, I am still setting up dates. I just got contacted yesterday by potentially two new locations. We're still working on the details. It doesn't need to be a big fancy event. Last year, I met in restaurants and bakeries and backyards. It doesn't need to be a huge event. But this is an opportunity to help educate yourself and your family and your neighbors about the American system, what was created, why it's so important that we read and understand it for ourselves. And if you can support me in this work, if you want to donate to the cause, help me bring this message to other places without charging people. I don't charge to show up and speak. I'm very blessed when people help pay for my travel and living costs, but I don't charge. If you'd like to support me, if you'd like to help me do this, you can donate to the Constitution Study, the tour online right there as well. All right there, constitutionstudy.com/tour. Now, another thing you can try is our online study. I do a Constitution Study online every other Monday, 7 p.m. Central Time. And we're reading and studying the Constitution. We get together on Zoom, a group of us. We're reading, we're studying, we're discussing, we're debating the Constitution. All of them are recorded, and they get posted generally about a week later. Now, if you'd like to find out more, go to constitutionstudy.com/study, and you can read all about the study. You can even try it absolutely free. I took our first three sessions where we covered the Bill of Rights, and they're posted for free. Again, find out more. Just go to constitutionstudy.com/study. But I do all of these things. I focus so much on helping people read and study and teach the Constitution. Why? Because of the rest of the quote from John Jay. He said, by knowing their rights, they're sooner perceived when they're violated and be the better prepared to defend and assert them. That's what we're trying to do. I want you to recognize quickly when something violates your rights, the rights of a family member, a neighbor, a friend, and I want you prepared to defend your rights and to assert your rights. Because ultimately, the only people that are responsible for protecting your rights start with you. If you're not willing to protect your rights, how can you expect someone else to protect them for you? And lastly, you know, AmericaOutloud.com is a tremendous resource. I am one of several voices there. I've interviewed several of them on this program. We bring news and information about what is going on, including analysis. So please make AmericaOutloud.com your part of your daily routine to see, find those the news programs, the commentaries, to understand what's going on. And if you will, please share these stories. See, it's one thing to be a passive acceptor of information, but if you want to help fix the problem, you need to do more. You need to do your part. You need to share the stories, the articles, the videos, the podcasts, everything that me and my fellow Outlouders create so that other people can find this wonderful news and information so we can all help share the blessings of liberty with ourselves and with our posterity.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends.